We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Final look at the running back class for the 2024 NFL draft. Before the draft, we will be talking about them, of course, after the draft as well. We are going to be joined in just a moment by Scott Barrett of Fantasy Points. We're going to go through some of his thoughts on the running back class, what he thinks of the upper end, and he has some interesting later names as well to bring to your attention as we go through it. We'll have some thoughts on the tight ends, and we'll finish off with a couple of bold predictions for the running back position with Scott. But Sean, we are just days away, maybe by the time the listeners are listening to this, hours away from the NFL draft. Day one, obviously, we're going to sit back to get in the action, but Sean and Ben are going to have Stealing Bananas live over on the Road of His YouTube channel. It is available in the show notes to find the channel and subscribe. We are closing in on 3,000 subscribers over there. But Sean and Ben will be on the Friday of the draft. And who better to fill you in a little bit more on the information than Sean Siegel? I know Sean is still a work in progress, but what's the early outline for the show?
Yeah, well, the day two Stealing Bananas has probably been, I mean, you forget about some of your other very favorite activities when you're in the moment. So I'm sure there are others that do at least somewhat compare, but it has been one of my favorite times of the last 2 or 3 years, being able to stream day two, rounds 2 and 3 with Ben Gretsch on the RotoViz YouTube channel, a special edition of Stealing Bananas. It's so much fun. You've got to be ready. You've got to be prepared. And then you have all of these surprises still, to where, you know, somebody who looked like maybe not even a priority UDFA, but just an undrafted player, sneaks into the back of round 3. Then we're all scrambling on that one. That is a lot of fun. But no, we get to see where these guys are going to go off. Day two is really where it is from a fantasy football perspective. You're going to have a huge chunk of the fantasy relevant players come off the board that day. We'll find out the landing spots. Ben and I will give our reaction to that live. Colin, we're hoping to put some of those on the Stealing Bananas regular feed as well, so you can get that in the audio version later if you can't, or for whatever reason don't want to jump in with us as we do it live. But that is going to be a fun time. We're going to have some great content out on the site during day one, and then column, the third volume of the rookie guide comes out at the end of this weekend, right? So you'll be able to get our post-draft mocks and rankings, any instant analysis that we have there, to have you completely and totally ready for your rookie drafts that for some leagues are going to start almost instantly. Colin, that'll be available to the purchasers. We've had a huge and fantastic response to that guide this year. It's been one of my favorite projects. If you haven't purchased it, all three episodes, or all three editions, I should say, are available for the price of just $20. And there are some coupons for site subscriptions as well. And so the overall product to the price, to what else it does for you, you know, I think is pretty fun. So go ahead and grab that. But Colin, today on the second episode with Scott, we're going to get running backs, we're going to get tight ends, we're going to get some QB bold predictions at the end. Stick around for all of that. And yeah, let's jump right into it here.
Let's jump into the running backs, and we'll dive in here and run through it. So we've some interesting names. We have Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson. Have you any, I guess, out of those guys, who is your preference in terms of outlook at the NFL level? And then have you any long-term bull predictions for those guys?
Yeah, so at the running back position, I've got a big two top tier, really pretty excited about both of those running backs. And after that, it gets very murky to me.
And I'm always interested when, you know, at the top, how are they comparing for you versus other previous years running backs? Are they a long way behind or are they somewhat comparable?
I compared it to, what was it, 2021? I said Jonathan Brooks was like a really poor man's Breece Hall, but still great. It's just Breece Hall is my RB1 in Dynasty. And then Trey Benson would be like Kenneth Walker, like equivalent or maybe a touch below. And then like the rest of the class is kind of similar where it's like a bunch of question marks. Maybe one guy turns into a Rashad White, but outside of that, I don't see much fantasy utility. But ultimately, I had Brooks ahead. I liked both, but Brooks wins out because he has the best three down potential in the class. Maybe he's like the only running back with legitimate three down potential. And so in a PPR league, targets are worth 2.5 times as much as a carry for fantasy running backs. So that's a big advantage over Benson, but I really liked him.
So Scott, I've been thrown off by the blasphemy of mentioning Breece Hall in this conversation, but
he did say per month, Breece Hall.
Differentiate.
There's a difference. Sean doesn't know anything about per man's Breece Hall. It's just Breece Hall and then nothing else.
Yeah.
Wait, where do you have Breece Hall?
I feel like we could say a rich man's Sean Siegel almost as accurately as a poor man's Breece Hall. I mean, come on. No. Give us a big bold prediction for Brooks then after the positive notes you've had.
So I had him. Basically, the analytics argument was just like he was 90% Bijan Robinson last year, which is insane because Bijan was like my model said the best running back to come out since Saquon Barkley. So a bold prediction is in the second half of his rookie season, he finishes as a top seven running back by fantasy points per game. I think it could happen because I just removed the first half. So in case you're worried about the ACL, and then it's just, there are RB needy teams here and there are good landing spots. If he goes to Dallas, if he goes to the Giants, if he goes to the Chargers, well, maybe not the Chargers, but I could see that happening.
So would it be accurate to put words in your mouth and say, you have the 108, Adunze is gone. Like, don't reach for JJ McCarthy, don't take Brian Thomas, take a running back. You can take a running back in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I think once we get all of these landing spots, Giants, Chargers, Cowboys, Panthers, we're going to see some of these running backs skyrocket. And I think most likely to be one of the top two running backs drafted and get this landing spot and do well there are these top two running backs. So I could see, I don't know where Benson is now. I don't know where Brooks is now, but if they're like early round two, I could definitely see them super flex sliding into that 108 or a one QB sliding to 105. And I might prefer them to Brian Thomas Jr. The only thing I'll say is I have to take JJ McCarthy at 108, and I've got him in that tier just because the fantasy points draft guide has him QB1 in this class. I don't feel great about it, but Brett Whitefield, who's the sharpest film mind I know, does. So, for me, it's that top eight tier right now pre-draft.
So when we get to the second group, you mentioned it being murkier. Is it fair? Is it the right kind of characterization to say this looks like a group that is sort of like athleticism and then sort of per play peripherals with, say, Lloyd and Wright, versus the guys who have more traditional workhorse results and have, proven more, at least to their own teams and coaches over the past handful of years, and a Braylon Allen and a Blake Corum? Are these the guys who are competing in the second tier? And is that the conflict or the contrast that we're looking at, or should we be looking at it from a completely different perspective?
No, that's a great way to break it up, where you have hyper efficiency, low volume, plus freak athleticism in Jalen Wright, Marshawn Lloyd. Then you have mediocre athleticism, but workhorse profiles in Corum and maybe Braylon Allen, or you could put him in this next tier, which is workhorse bell cow production, but red flag levels of athleticism and size, which is Bucky Irving, Audric Estime, and maybe Braylon Allen. He didn't run the 40 at the combine or his pro day. So I would call that red flag athleticism, just because that was a big concern with him as well. But a little bit more of a mystery than like Irving, which we know is bad, or Estime, which at least the combine was bad.
So which type of profile do you feel more comfortable with? Do you think translates better for fantasy? You know, is it a matter of we're looking at sort of high floor, low ceiling with one group and low floor, high ceiling with the other? Or is that, again, maybe a little bit of a trap in thinking about it that way, where, I mean, obviously we're going to need to know where the guys land. We're going to need to know the caliber of the teams and, you know, their teammates, the guys they're going to be fighting with on the depth chart. And yet, I mean, some of the guys seem like they're more landing spot dependent, and other ones may be resilient in the face of that, in part because there's almost no scenario in which they could actually give you volume.
Yeah. I think it depends. Like, there's a balancing act there, and I think it depends on the player. So like, and like, you, it's all really just like a projection of volume in my mind, because volume isn't everything when it comes to fantasy running backs, but it's like close to 95%, it feels like sometimes. And so like, that's what we want. We want high end draft capital, because it yields in more touches. We want premium talents, if there are any in this class, because it results in more volume. We want good athleticism and ideal size, because for the same reasons. So like Jalen Wright, it could be because he has like ideal size, freak athleticism, hyper efficient last year, but I struggle to see him ever being a volume running back at the next level. To me, he's just Tevin Coleman. He's one of those guys who's forever capped at 8 to 11 touches per game, with most of those coming on the ground. And the coach puts him in when they're hoping for an explosive play, but they don't really trust him in any other capacity. They don't really trust him against stacked boxes. He saw very little looks against stack boxes last year. It was all against light front. So his production was a little fraudulent. He has vision issues on tape, according to Brett Whitefield. So like, that was a player where I kind of didn't see it. Marshawn Lloyd a little bit more. You can make some excuses for the late breakout. He didn't have like the counting stats that come close to some of the other running backs, but he was on like a super pass heavy team with the best quarterback in college football, and the efficiency was off the charts. But he's like another one where, well, he's going to be probably, I said, the most landing spot dependent running back in the class, because like, if you look at his splits in a man gap scheme versus zone scheme, by far the most disparate of like any running back I've ever seen. So you're rooting for him to go to a man gap concept team. This is something that like really hurt Damian Pierce last year. I'm a believer, but horrible fit for outside zone, but great at man gap. The issue is for both of those running backs is man gap is pretty rare. It's, I think, only 12 teams played it over 50% of the time last year. I don't know. Everyone's like a unique case. Estime, I'm pretty high on despite the bad combine, but Irving, it was, even if you ignore it, there's still the size. And I don't know that his size ever warrants more than a handful of touches per game, or a dozen or so. I was kind of all over the place. I don't know if you want me to dig into anything in particular.
No, I like that there. The thing with Irving is just wanting to believe that a team will give him the chance. I think the size is massively overrated in terms of reality. And when I say reality, what it actually does for NFL teams. Now, what it means to NFL teams is a lot. And so you're looking for a very outlier type of situation to find an opportunity for a back like Irving to do what his collegiate production would suggest he could actually do if you were to trust him.
If he were 12 pounds heavier, he would have been my RB3 instead of my RB8. So yeah, maybe I'm just massively overreacting to that. But that was the big concern, was just, it's typically running backs of that size don't get the volume. But I mean, like, numbers were off the charts in college. He did get that volume in college. And we talked about it with the wide receivers, how the NFL is kind of trending towards smaller wide receivers. You're seeing that with tight ends, Sam Laporta, knock for his size. Brock Bowers is the same size. And maybe they're going the same way with running backs. You know, look at Devon Achane last year. Certainly a possibility, something to think about.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You mentioned Estime a minute ago, so maybe this is all going to blend together, but there isn't a particularly clear third tier in this running back class. But the likes of Estime, Will Shipley, Ray Davis, you might even have an Irving in there. What are some of your thoughts in that next group? Is there any other names not mentioned there that you think that should be higher than the players that we've talked about so far on today's show?
I had Shipley 10, Ray Davis 11, and then Estime 5. So definitely much higher. He set the Notre Dame record in rushing touchdowns last year, led the FBS in yards per carry. You could stack up his numbers against Kyren Williams, and he like smashes Kyren, at least on the ground. And he had like identical offensive line play when either running back was at Notre Dame. Some upside as a pass catcher, tied for the class high in career yards per target. Key stat for SMA is he faced stack boxes at the second highest rate in the class, easily led the class in box adjusted yards per carry. The big knock on him is obviously that combine, much like it was a big knock for Kyren Williams. But his pro day was much better. 4.61 40-yard dash would have bumped him up from a red flag spork score, my custom athleticism model, from 32.1 to 53.8. So like just about perfectly average. And he, like I said, Sean, you know, like I probably underrate athleticism, but the good news for Estime is, if he's a perfectly average athlete, like that's not as important to me as, you know, how insanely productive and efficient he was. He's also like my type. Like every guy has a type. Some like him tall or short or thick or skinny, you know? And like my type is definitely Estime, which is big, thick, powerful, explosive, agile for his size, but lacking in top end speed. Graham Barfield tells me I have a plotter fetish, but Estime is definitely my type. So I like him a lot.
I like that. I like that. So as we go and look for some more plotters here, there's a mix of interesting small school players that I think adds more depth to this class than it tends to get credit for. But it's going to be more difficult to evaluate these players because they're not facing the same caliber of defense. So everything that you have to do is going to be filtered through that. At the same time, we've certainly seen small school players who had immense volume and then, you know, tested okay athletically, go and perform well at the NFL level. So as we're looking at these players, do you feel like you've got a good read on, say, a Dylan Lauby, a Kamani Vital, Davis, Jaden Sheridan, Rasheen Ali, Frank Gore Jr.? I mean, all of those guys, and in part because they have played against a lesser caliber of competition, put up some pretty interesting peripherals and maybe are more in that workhorse vein than some of the guys who will go ahead of them.
Yeah. So my model just like absolutely hates non-power five running backs, really, really hates FCS running backs. Lobby to me was just like, maybe there's a 10% chance he could be the next Danny Woodhead, but he was below average as a runner in the FCS. So like, I personally just kind of wrote him off. Like, I'm chasing bell cows with every down potential. To me, just looks like a scat back without much upside. I could be wrong, but to me, like I didn't really dive into Kamani Vital as much as I should. I think Davis to me looks like a mildly richer man's Pierre Strong. But like, again, I'm just like a hater on these small school guys. So I'll give you a different one. The small school guy I was legitimately excited about was Blake Watson. He's right now the consensus RB26, but Daniel Jeremiah this morning put him in his top 150. I think it was like RB11, and he checked in as my RB13. It's just okay. Yeah, he wasn't power five, but he was he played for Memphis, which has produced Tony Pollard, Antonio Gibson, Kenny Gainwell, Patrick Taylor over the past five draft classes. Great three down potential, 103.5 rushing yards per game, 39.7 receiving yards per game over his last 20, like even above Jonathan Brooks, who, remember, I really liked his three down potential. And then in both 2022 and 2023, he wasn't just like hyper efficient. He was freakishly efficient. Second best ever mark in 2022 by missed tackles forced per touch. And then by yards after contact per attempt, he was, I think, ninth best. And then you look at the top 13 on that list, it's Rashad Penny, Kareem Hunt, Devin Singletary, Tajay Spears, Darrell Henderson, Darwin Thompson, Dwayne McBride, and like one other guy you've never heard of. And I know that like those names sound gross, but it's like when you're bucketing off for group of five, like that's a really good list. It just means like, you know, like group of five guys almost never hit, but it's like, hey, who knows? Maybe he could be a Devin Singletary. So he was my favorite deep sleeper. Also, athleticism, really interesting. Like his pro day burst score would have been the highest ever by a running back. And then really fast 40, he's just undersized. He's also really old, and there's some other red flags, but I don't know. I just like the upside argument on him.
And we do like to throw this question in about the pro day. You referenced it on a couple of these guys being pretty meaningful. You like to use that in your custom athletic score. You find that you get better results with that?
I only use it if there's not a combine, or if I can make, or if the numbers were dramatically different than the combine, then I just kind of note it. So that's what I did with Estime. This was a non-combine invite. Like, yeah, those guys almost never hit. But so pro day numbers are also, I think, like more legit now than they used to be, because Dane Brugler puts out his The Beast, and he sources directly from multiple NFL teams and then takes an average of those numbers. But yeah, like if you look up on our site, fantasypoints.com, and check out where I have Spork listed, I only count official times, and I just have unofficial as background within articles.
Well, it's cool to hear about that. It's sad to remember Darwin Thompson and what never manifested there.
I was a big believer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd love to do another 15 minutes or so on running backs, but it's time for the tight ends. Colin, who do we have here after Blake Bowers?
Yeah, so we have talked about Blake Bowers in some recent shows. I was feeling bad at a point where we just continuously did not mention him. So we know that he's up at the top. I'm interested to see how close these two names are for you to him as Jatavion Sanders and Ben Sinnott. How, like, obviously the hype coming in last year with Sam Laporta and what he was able to do, people are very interested, obviously, in rookie tight ends as we move forward into this year with Bowers. But those two names are somebody, or players who have come up pretty consistently as a drumbeat over the course of these shows. How are you feeling about both of those guys?
Yeah, I was lower on than consensus on Jatavion Sanders. This is where, you know, I kind of underrate athleticism with running backs and tight ends, but, or running backs and wide receivers, but it's just massively important with tight ends. And to me, he had red flag levels of athleticism. So he had a 46.0 Spork score. And over the past decade, we've only ever seen two tight ends earn a score below the 66th percentile. So he was like way below that. Reach 750 receiving yards in a single season. It was Dalton Schultz and Jake Ferguson who only barely cleared 750 receiving yards. So that's a big concern. I also like looking into his production and efficiency. Like, I know he had high-end target competition, but like the efficiency marks were like super underwhelming to begin with. And then the more you dive into that, the more concerning they get. So tight ends average the most yards per route run in line. It's like something of an efficiency hack at the college level. But Sanders was like way below average, I think below 1.35 in the slot or out wide. And so if you just like adjust for that, he looked like super underwhelming. I had him tight end three, but like, I don't know. He's not someone I want to draft. Like, you can make a case to put him lower. Ben Sinnott, I had tight end five. I don't know. He's fine. He didn't really get me all that excited, but he is super athletic. A big concern I have is he won the Lowman Trophy last year. And so I'm worried a team's going to think he's a fullback. It's just like weird he won it. I think he only had like 60 out of like 600 snaps as a fullback, but
that has come up a few times with him. So you're not the only one with that concern, but you did mention there that they are tight end three and tight end five. Who's tight end two? Then if we don't want to skip over, we talked about Bowers being tight end one.
Jaheim Bell.
Okay. So if Bell is tight end two, give us some thoughts on Bell.
So he's, do you guys hear this in the background or is this just me?
Yeah, no, just in the last few seconds.
It's the landscapers. No fire alarms.
This is gonna be the lawnmower podcast.
So Jaheim Bell, he had the best single season by yards per route run in PFF college history. That's since 2014. I think Kyle Pitts ranks second on that list and a distant second over the last 5 or 6 years. He ranks third in career yards per route run behind only Bowers and Kyle Pitts. He is the best receiver with the ball in his hands of any tight end in at least a decade, leading all Power Five tight ends by career missed tackles forced per reception and yards after the catch per reception. There are a number of concerns here. Like with Sinnott, we don't know that he's exactly a tight end. He had more rushing yards than receiving yards 2 years ago. The size is repeatedly brought up. It's just not really a factor to me when he's like only 1 inch shorter and 3 to 6 pounds lighter than Sam Laporta, Brock Bowers, Trey McBride, and a bunch of these other tight ends. Like, so like everyone's like, oh, he's a tweener. He's too small. You're talking about 1 inch, like, and 3 pounds. And he has the longer wingspan than any of those names I just mentioned. Elite marks in yards per route run in the slot, out wide, in line, good blocking grades. I don't know. I tight end two, and I feel good about it. I've tried this year to hedge more against projected draft capital, but I just felt like I wasn't being honest. It's easily the tight end two analytics profile, and we'll just have to wait and see. But right now, I think he's like consensus tight end 10. So, oh, and athletically, he was good too. Like Spork liked him despite the gap in size. Third fastest tight end in the class.
Yeah, I mean, how does he get to be tight end 10? That part doesn't make any sense. And whenever I rank him up, I get the pushback of, you know, after the draft, you're not going to be able to rank him at all. And I mean, there's just such a massive disconnect there.
Yeah, I have no idea, man. It's bizarre. Brett Whitefield loved the tape too. Like, check out the Fantasy Points draft guide. Everything I said analytically is backed up by what Brett said when he watched him on film. Said, you know, he has way more upside than like seven of the guys going drafted ahead of him. He's good. He looks like a complete receiver. The size issues did not show up on film. It's bizarre. Maybe it's just one of those things where, you know, like tweener, and it's just like lazy analysis, lazy eval. But I don't know. I'm bullish for better or worse. The way I wrote it up was like, we're like, even if everything he said was true, and like the 1 inch is like a massive disadvantage for tight ends, it's like there's still like a 20% chance he could be Delanie Walker or Jordan Reed, who's exactly the same height. I could see that happening. I don't know. I like him.
Well, this has been so much fun, Scott. Close us out with a couple of bold predictions here. We're not going to go deep into the quarterback analysis, but you mentioned earlier the really high grade that you guys have on JJ McCarthy. I'm kind of wanting to know who's going to be the QB1 from this class in 2034, and who's going to be the guy where halfway into the season, people are already done with him. And we're talking about among the relatively meaningful names here.
That's a good question. Who are we going to be done with?
Yeah, so who's going to be this year's pre-show? That's basically the question.
Bryce, yeah. I don't know, man. I can't do that just because, like, analytically, I'm not seeing anything predictive for quarterbacks. But you want a hot take? The hot take is it's going to take years for Caleb Williams to beat out Jaden Daniels by fantasy points per game. But 2028 maybe is the first year that Caleb Williams averages more fantasy points per game than Jaden Daniels. That's my hot take.
What about May in there as well? I mean, are we going to have Daniels and May settle in this? And again, it depends on how your format scores quarterback play, but settle in that 25, 26 point per game range, and Williams settle in that 22, 23 range. And I mean, you're basically saying that 5-6 years from now, the Williams enthusiasts are going to be still pointing, you know, to 2 or 3 years down the road from that, where their guy ends up being more valuable.
You mean like Trevor Lawrence, right?
Well, I hope that we don't get in the Trevor Lawrence situation. I think that we're talking about infinity when Trevor Lawrence is actually valuable.
So, all right. So my the way I'm breaking down quarterbacks analytically is I just go off of projected draft capital, Brett Whitefield's film score, and then I tweak based on rushing upside. But like, Brett did not like Drake May. Brett was like, this is Carson Wentz. He did not like Caleb Williams. He was like, rich man's Johnny Manziel. This is his QB2 in the class. He loves JJ McCarthy, but it's like, what's the rushing upside? And like, you're kind of on an island with that. I think Nix and Penix are underrated right now, just because I had Jim Nagy on my podcast. He said he talked to NFL teams. He thinks Penix goes mid round one. Nix goes late round one, but there's a chance like Denver makes a move for him, which would be a sick landing spot. So those guys are undervalued now, but it's, yeah, I kind of just throw my hands up with the quarterbacks. My bold take is I don't know why Jaden Daniels isn't in the QB1 conversation. It's like, people are like, well, his ceiling is Lamar Jackson and his floor is Justin Fields. And I'm like, that's freaking awesome. Justin Fields is a mid-range QB1 every time he started, and he sucked ass, right? And so like, you're telling me his floor is guaranteed mid-range QB1 every game he starts, or he's Lamar Jackson, who's like, it's hard to see Caleb Williams ever touching that rushing upside.
Yeah. This has been awesome, Scott. For listeners, obviously, they can check you out on Twitter at @ScottBarrettDFB. But you also mentioned your podcast and obviously fantasypoints.com. They can find your work there. But have you got anything coming out you know, pre-draft, post-draft in the plan, or you want people to check out?
Yeah, check out the rookie running back, wide receiver, tight end articles. As you're watching the draft and see names come off the board, you can just search those articles. After the draft, I'll have my post-draft rookie rankings. I'll go like 50 deep for Superflex, tight end premium, and one QB. And then I'll do my annual post-draft presser review, where I legitimately just watch like 90 hours of post-draft press conferences and take notes and come up with the most actionable fantasy takeaways.
So that was fantastic having Scott on the show. As I mentioned earlier, check out his stuff over on fantasypoints.com. Sean, we didn't have the fire alarm podcast. We almost had a lawnmower episode there, as I think the landscaper was outside the window, but it drifted off into the distance. So hopefully the listeners enjoyed the conversation with Scott. We're obviously coming up to the NFL draft. Sean and Ben will be over on the RotoViz YouTube channel, where you can check out some of their day two thoughts and takeaways live during the draft. So make sure you check that out when you have the opportunity. We will release some of those as Stealing Bananas short episodes in the kind of post-draft days after, but to catch it live, check it out over there. But that is going to do it for this edition of RotoViz Overtime. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. And of course, you can check Sean's work out on rotoviz.com. And until we are back, have a good one. Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.